morning, we're now assembled to take up the matter of denominated as GP, or the matter is regarding GP, but it specifically is JA versus the Indiana Department of Child Services. You'll notice that there's only four of the five members of the court assembled visibly today, but I can tell you there are five members assembled because Justice David is unable to be in Indianapolis today, but he's watching our argument as we speak, and so he will be participating in the case as well. This is a civil transfer case in which transfer has been granted, and each side has been assigned 20 minutes. The appellant, counsel for JA, will argue first. Let me introduce counsel to you. For the appellant, we have Amy Carrozos, representing JA, and for the and she's assisted by Ruth Johnson and Annette Biesecker, and representing the state, the Attorney General has sent Robert Henke on behalf of the state of Indiana. We're ready to proceed. Ms. Carrozos, you may proceed. Carrozos, I apologize.
Thank you. May it please the court, I've reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal. J.A., the mother in this case, my client, is here today attending the oral argument. She drove in from Virginia this morning. During the CHINS, back in the CHINS proceedings, Mom was indigent, and she requested counsel at a critical point in the CHINS proceedings. And those proceedings ultimately led to the termination of her parental rights to her son, GP. The CHINS court determined that Mom was entitled to counsel, but failed to make the appointment. After DCS filed to terminate her parental rights, Mom wrote to the court again and requested counsel. And then when counsel was finally appointed, that was nearly a year after her first request. When counsel was appointed, when she got an attorney, the first thing the attorney did was move to dismiss the termination. The attorney also, in the CHINS proceedings, moved to set aside the permanency finding because she hadn't been represented. The motion to dismiss in the termination case was denied, and Mom's parental rights were involuntarily terminated. Although her son at that time was living with his paternal grandparents, and my client presented evidence that she was sober and had been for over a year, was in a stable home, and was appropriately parenting at that time GP's full brother. Mom appealed, and she lost in the Court of Appeals. She asked for relief because the evidence is insufficient and because she was denied counsel during the CHINS proceedings. So I hope to get to all the points today. I hope to discuss sufficiency of the evidence, but I think that we're here today to discuss the appointment of counsel. So that is where I will start.
I've got a preliminary question. When you look at, let's say there was an error. She asked for counsel, she qualified for counsel, she didn't get counsel appointed to her, and then she sort of flew off the radar. She didn't show up at the permanency hearing. But then when she was appointed counsel in a separate matter, the TPR, the law requires that the court in the TPR look at, and she had a counsel to show all these things you're talking about today. I'm sober now, I've got housing, I've got this, because that's what trial courts are charged with, a TPR. Why should the error that was made in the CHINS case affect the termination case, because she had the opportunity to put all the things that you're talking about? If she could have put this before the court, or it could have changed in the CHINS, given the standard that the trial court had in the TPR?
Well, so the problem is, at the time of the TPR, you've had months of DCS making the case against Mom. You've had months of decisions being made. At points along that way, counsel could have done things that would have changed the course of that CHINS case, permanency finding, and then ultimately the termination. By the time they got to the termination, things that counsel could have affected were held against Mother. For example, the visitation. If she had been appointed counsel when she asked for it in the CHINS case, counsel would have ask for visitation to be reinstated could have affected that. She was having difficulty making services, and they dismissed her IOP because she had missed her intensive outpatient services for substance abuse because they said she had missed too many. And there was some discrepancy on whether that was true. Council could have moved to reinstate those. Interstate Compact was something that she had been asking for her son to be placed with her mother, who lived in Virginia, from the beginning of the case. And at one of the child and family team meetings, DCS was tasked with starting that process but never did. So council definitely would have pushed that. So there, you can't, like, unring that bell. By the time they get to termination, the things have already happened that she can't change and go back and change. So she did attempt to show the improvements that she had made, like on her own, when she moved, and then once council got involved, the things that council helped her do after the termination had filed. But at that point, it's really too late to go back and make all the changes that would have been made at the CHINS, in the CHINS proceedings that council would have helped with.
At the TPO, what did she not, that, I mean, looking at the error and looking at, if we don't find that this is a structural error with regard to automatic reversal, and we look at a harmless error, even a heightened harmless error standard, what would she want to be able to show in the termination that would change the court's finding in the termination? When you talk about you can't go back and ring the bell, okay, she is where she is at the time of the termination. You mm-hmm. say she's come a long way, and I don't want to get into the sufficiency until we talk about the right to counsel. What evidence did she not get an opportunity to present with regard to her changed condition?
So mom did present evidence of her changed condition. What the court would have to look at is what difference it would have made at those points to have counsel.
So her evidence would have been better had she had counsel over the course of the previous 10 or 11 months. I mean, not to put too fine a point on it, but is the argument basically that if she'd had counsel appointed when she was supposed to have had counsel appointed, a lawyer could have helped save her from herself over the course of the ensuing year before the TPR hearing took place?
Yes, not only that, but an attorney could have helped save her from the court and from DCS, what happened in this case, because she had made progress for a long period of time before they got determination, but she was faulted for not, like, actually entering a structured substance abuse program until after the attorney got involved.
But that would not have, affected the finding that the child's a CHINS, correct? I mean, as I understand it, at the initial CHINS hearing, mom waived right to counsel, correct?
That's correct.
And after having waived the right to counsel, there was a hearing, and the child was adjudicated a CHINS.
Yes.
So at a later date, she says, but now I want counsel. And I guess that gets me back to the CHINS finding itself is not affected by the failure to appoint counsel, correct?
True, that's correct.
So the only issue is how does it affect the termination? Well, that gets me back to Justice Rush's question. What would be the remedy? I mean, what are you asking that we do? Another termination hearing, or what is your remedy?
Yes, the remedy would be to reverse the termination order, and she would be back in the position of the CHINS. She would be back in a CHINS if they decided to reinstate a CHINS. Otherwise, she would be working.
Well, there would be a CHINS determination. And the only thing, if we would say that she was entitled to another termination hearing, what evidence would have been different? You'd have to speak from the time that termination order was entered. So what evidence would there have been different if we make the ruling that if we decide that she should have been appointed counsel?
Well, now, if you make the ruling, there's plenty of more evidence. You know, now we have a whole nother year. Mom's been doing beautifully. And parental rights wouldn't be terminated, in my opinion. If you go back, it's impossible to go back now to the point where she asked for counsel and for me to prove that that's the difficulty in this, you know, asking you to do a harmless error, because it's really impossible to go back and show the what really happens in a CHINS. The really important critical points are not the CHIN's finding, because in most cases, parents admit. Like in this case, my client admitted to an amended charge 8 days after the petition was filed, because she wanted to try and start getting her child back, and she admitted that she had a substance abuse problem and that coercive intervention of the court was needed. It's when things started going wrong, all these points, when the decisions are made, things outside of the courtroom, you know, where an attorney could have helped with child and family team meetings, visitation, asking, she was homeless. DCS can be, I think there's a limit, $750 per parent, where they could have paid for rent. Her attorney could have asked them to pay for a deposit for rent, things like that. So really, it's almost impossible to go back and recreate what would have happened had counsel been involved. But I think in this case, she made a pretty good effort to show that, because she did argue. I mean, there is evidence about the interstate compact that was never started, and the counsel could have had an effect with that and could have asked the court to order DCS to do it.
What effect is the waiver of counsel at the initial CHINS hearing? What effect does that have? What does the statute dictate what happens when you waive the initial CHINS and then the initial request for a counsel, the CHINS proceeding, and then resurrects that request later on? Does the statute, what statute dictates what the outcome should be?
Well, so the statute is 31-3446 that specifically states a parent or guardian or custodian in a CHINS case has a right to counsel in the CHINS proceedings at any of the CHINS proceedings. And upon request, if the court finds that they're indigent, then counsel will be appointed. So it's mandatory, it's specific. I would liken that to a juvenile delinquency case, where if the child admits to a charge, waives their right to counsel at the hearing where they admit, later on at a modification, certainly they might want a counsel and might request counsel to be appointed, and the court's not going to refuse their request for counsel because it's required. Well, here it's required by statute. And here, in CHINS, it makes sense because so much of what happens that's important is what happens after that CHINS finding. Because parents do want to cooperate. You want to work with the court and DCS to get your child back, but then sometimes you get to the point where it doesn't look like reunification with you is where things are headed. So I think that it's really important after that to follow the statute and allow parents to have an attorney in the CHINS. So I wanted to talk about the statutory construction, if you all are interested in that, because I do believe that she did have a statutory right to counsel, and that I hope this court will clarify that there is a statutory right to counsel in a CHINS proceeding when an indigent parent requests it, because it's specifically set out in the statute. It's very clear. That's what it says. And that statute, 31-3446, was amended in 1998 to include that. And there's a couple of other things that happened around that time that I think makes the intent very clear that we think it's important here in Indiana to afford parents that right. One thing was that there used to be a general statutory right in a civil case to counsel if you were indigent and you requested it. And that was repealed in 1998. And so now litigants in a civil case only have the right to counsel if they're indigent in extraordinary circumstances, if the court decides that they have that right. The other thing that happened around the time that this was amended in 1998 was the Adoption and Safe Family Act was just enacted. And that put some more perilous circumstances with CHINs. A termination of parental rights automatically must be filed if a child is out of the home for 15 of the most recent 22 months. They shorten the time periods. A permanency hearing has to take place within a year. It used to be 18 months. So these things were happening at the same time. So I think that it's important to acknowledge that parents have the statutory right to counsel in a CHINS proceeding. The other thing that I wanted to argue is that the test should be the same as it is in a termination of parental rights. And the justification before this was, before the statute was amended to specifically provide for the right, was that it's less serious in a CHINS. It doesn't automatically lead to termination. Well, it's really not. It's become more serious in CHINS because the stakes have become higher. In the termination of parental rights statute, one of the bases can be two CHINS findings on the child. So we have more serious consequences from CHINS. And the bright line test, counsel is important for so many reasons, but like I argued before, it's almost impossible to go back and recreate that record to show what a difference counsel could make. A study by the National Council of Juvenile and Family Court Judges found that improved legal representation for parents increased reunifications by over 50% and decreased the rate of termination of parental rights by almost 45%. And it expedited the court process. So it's clearly in the best interest of families, children, and parents to provide attorneys for parents when they need them in CHINS cases.
I know your time is about just running, but I do have a question. Maybe you've answered it, and if you did, I apologize. Assuming that we agree with you that counsel should have been appointed, was not, et cetera, and was error not to do so, what is the standard of review for that error?
So the standard of review, I would say, is my argument would be you should apply the same standard of review as you do in a termination. And the denial of the right to counsel automatically requires a reversal. So in this case, it should require that the termination be reversed.
And why would it not be a harmless error, harmless beyond a reasonable doubt?
Or by clear and convincing evidence, which would be the standard in the termination.
So in a termination parental rights case, when counsel is denied, there's a statutory right to counsel, but when that's denied a parent, it requires an automatic reversal, and that's because...
By what authority? You cite authority for that?
Well, the cases that I've relied on, one is in Reg KS versus Marion County Department of Child Services. It's a Court of Appeals case, 917 Northeast 2nd, 158. In Ray D.A., 869 Northeast 2nd, 501, another Indiana Court of Appeals case. But in every case where counsel has been denied a parent in a termination of parental rights case, the standard is that requires reversal.
But just to be clear, your client did have representation at the termination stage, correct?
Yes, but she had a statutory right at the CHINS phase, which was denied her. So we're saying the same standard should apply for this statutory violation of her right.
Thank you, Ms. Carruthers. We'll hear from you more on rebuttal.
Thank you.
May it please the Court. I would like to get two points out quickly, which relate directly to the merits of this case, which I think at least will steer the Court where we think the Court needs to be steered. First of all, we are asking this Court to find that there was no reversible error here. The standard, if you're going to show due process issue, is you have to show harm. And to show harm, you have to show that you didn't have a fair hearing. Here, there was a fair hearing. Mom was heard throughout about her issues within the TPR case, and counsel did a great job, as I always say, represented Mom on those issues. But I would like to cite to something from Mother from the transcript, which indicates she basically chose not to pursue counsel after it had been appointed to her. On page 20 of the transcript, lines 14 through 17, DCS asked Mother this question. After you asked for counsel in February 2011, why didn't you follow up? Her response was, because I was pregnant, and I was afraid DCS would take my child, was scared to contact anybody in the court. That's Mom's statement. That sets the stage. So although Mom shows up in May of 2011 without counsel, Mom at that point maybe had her own plans about what she was going to do. She was pregnant. She knew she was pregnant. In fact, according to her own testimony, she knew she was pregnant a couple weeks after she was pregnant. and supposedly that happened at the end of March. So I'm not sure how that works, but she said she knew she was pregnant right away. So by May of 2011, she shows up without counsel. Goes to the second point I want to make. Find that the evidence was sufficient.
Hold on. Whose obligation was it to get counsel appointed for her and to... the court says they're going to appoint counsel. Now, is it up to her to go set up the appointment and find the lawyer?
Well, there's a little bit of in the record. It's not necessarily.
I mean, you're
kind
of clear. Making the point in the record you just referred us to. The point seems to be that it was her fault.
No, it was her choice. It was her choice once she didn't present a counsel not to seek counsel. She shows up in May at the next hearing without counsel. She's late at that hearing. And in fact, if you look at the transcript, the supplemental transcript or appendix, which is just filed by mother, the May hearing shows that she was late. The court actually asks, does mom have counsel? And the court believes that looking at the record, she can't tell mom has counsel. Now, if you look at, just to go back really quickly, the court's order of February 2011 does say we're appointing counsel to mom. Something happened in between there. And if you look at the May hearing in 2012, in the Chin's case, again in the supplemental appendix, the PD's fallen on the sword there saying, we forgot. We didn't do what we were supposed to do. So it's not clear here. The court took the blame upon itself. The TPR court points to the Chin's court as not having done what it was supposed to do. But the record is not that clear. And in fact, by May of 2012, the public defender, mother's attorney, is saying, we failed. Mom contacted us. We failed. At what point, I don't know. It looks like it was early on, probably between February and May. But if I can make my second point, Your Honor.
And where in the record does the PD's office say we failed? Could you?
That's actually in the new transcript. I believe it's 52, or excuse me, not transcript, but the supplemental appendix which mom filed. I believe it's 52. And it's towards the top, and she says, mom did what she was supposed to. We failed. We didn't appoint her counsel, which is contrary to what the same PD said in April at the first termination here. Very first page of the transcript, she's saying court was supposed to appoint, court didn't appoint, and it's not in the court's order. Well, it is in the court's order, and her story then changes by May, maybe because she has more information. Don't know. So as to the second point, another statement by mom, which I believe sets the tone for this case and why the case ended up where it was. And this is a statement early on, and this is actually in the mother's supplemental appendix, page 31, lines 9 through 15. Counsel, DCS counsel at that point says, this is closing out the hearing. This is where mom, in May, she's asking to reinvest in services. And she hasn't. At this point, everything's been closed out. And DCS counsel says, well, mother and father have said that they did not want to cooperate with any governmental officials or employees. And mom said yes. She says yes. But now we've changed. Now we're ready to re-enter into services. That is on March 24, 2011. DCS with her says, okay, let's do this. Let's reset everything. Start all over again, basically. But that was the last DCS heard from mom until termination. Mom disappeared. Mom did nothing. So she did nothing up front because she didn't want to deal with DCS. And then when she's given the second chance to totally start all over again, she does nothing again. This indicates mom's attitude. Mom doesn't want to really be told what to do. It's only when her feet are held to the fire, when TPR has been actually filed, and not even immediately then, she knows in October of 2011, TPR has been filed, but doesn't take any action for a while. That's in one of the letters to mom, to her boyfriend, and GAL's exhibits in the transcript. She knew in October TPR been filed, but did nothing. So anyway, first, mom appears to have waived or at least chosen not to follow through with counsel because she was afraid. She was pregnant. She was afraid DCS would come and take her child. We know between May and August of 2011, mom's not doing anything. Mom's not being heard from. She's not in contact with DCS. It appears that she left just before the permanency hearing in August that she knew about.
Well, fit these facts in. Let's say that we find under subsection 6, mom had a right to counsel. She asked for counsel.
Mm-hmm.
go from there. So we find a right to counsel at that juncture. It's not just, you know, you argued a couple of things in your brief saying that you, the right to counsel goes to just the original petition. Mm-hmm. We find that she had a right to counsel. We know that a TPR is based, a CHINS record is very important to the TPR. It's based almost exclusively on a TPR. What next, then? What type of analysis does a court do? If mom had a right to counsel, that right was violated. There's a balancing test with regard to due process. I have a hard time seeing that, you know, there's a countervailing government interest supporting failure to appoint counsel under the Matthews test. What analysis do we use for what is the, for that error and how it applies to the TPR? I realize you're throwing a lot of facts out right now, and a lot of those facts weren't in your briefing.
Well, because some of it's from the supplemental appendix that was just filed last week. A lot of the facts were. So the reason we'd raise that in our argument is to say because 3134.46 is an informational statute. It says DCS shall file this information with the parents. And it specifically says that written information regarding a child who is alleged to be abused and neglected. Okay, so that's important.
And I understand. Let's just say that we find that under six, mom had a right to counsel. And I understand your arguments up to that point. You briefed those well. We find that mom had a right to counsel under six. What next? We find an error in the underlying CHINS case. How does that error in this affect, and what type of analysis would you support with regard to evaluating that error in the resulting TPR?
Well, the thing that's important here, and that's why I was kind of moving, all the rights are pretty much set at the adjudication and the disposition. The disposition is a final appealable order in the case. At that point, the party's rights are set. And in fact, we have appellate law that says that. That's why it's so important. In Re KD, which this court decided, said that's why the adjudication and disposition was so important. That's where all the rights are set. That's what's going to happen now. That's when the liberty interest has actually kind of been interfered with at that point. So what has happened is at the dispositional, mom at this point is admitted, child's a CHINS, that means child has a CHINS condition that mom has to participate in. And so that's what the dispositional does. So now, at that point, mom has been given the tools to effectively eradicate the CHINS position, the CHINS condition in the child. So what will mom do? What can mom do? Isn't it up to the parent to do what's got to be done? If, for instance, an attorney can come in and take mom to everything and make mom engage in all these services and hold mom by the hand, has mom ever proven what she can do?
I want to go back to my question because there are different critical junctures in a CHINS case. It could be going from a plan of reunification with the parent to the, you know, the permanency, not having counsel at a permanency hearing where you've got permanency. What are your permanency options? What is the interstate compact? I mean, that's hard enough for attorneys to traverse, let alone a parent. So I still want to go back to my other question. Let's say we find that mom had a right to a counsel. You don't, it's not one and done with regard to the original CHINs. What is the analysis that is done at the TPR for that procedural error in the underlying CHINs? And there's a lot of cases that talk about procedural errors in underlying CHINs can be grounds for reversal in a TPR.
That's right. There has to be harm. You have to be able to identify harm.
I think her question, though, is by what standard? Is it, do you have to show it harmless beyond a reasonable doubt, or do you have to show it harmless simply by clear and convincing evidence?
I'd say by clear and convincing evidence is a standard. I mean, preponderance,
why?
Of course.
Why do you say that?
Well, because you're at the TPR. So let's say you're trying to resolve this at the TPR, because that's what happened here. You're not trying to resolve it at the CHINs, where preponderance basically is a standard review. You have the TPR where clear and convincing is the standard of review. It just makes sense at that point to, you know, it's kind of hard to divide those two things up. At that point, the question is, can mom show by clear, can, I guess, let's reverse it, can mom show by clear and convincing evidence she's been harmed? Or in the alternative, can DCS show that, well, it doesn't matter, despite this, the record will still be the same, as the Court of Appeals found here. Their position was, let's say that all this was really problematic, she should have been appointed counsel. What it comes down to, it wouldn't make really any difference in this case. I probably won't be able to get into all my facts, but the facts from the very beginning of the case show mom's not participating. They talk about transportation, she's poor, she has no housing. We understand all that. Of course, that meant she wasn't able to care for the child. But the other thing is, if you look at service providers, they are trying to help her. One of the service providers says, I will arrange transportation for you. Let me know. Please let me know. I'm here for you. Another service provider says, we will help you with housing. We may have to put you in a shelter to begin with, just to get your feet in the ground and get going. But we'll help you with that. So, I mean, you have to look at the totality of that case. You're looking backwards, just as you do in the TPR. It's the same thing. You're looking back and saying, what was it? What was the chance condition? How did it start? And now, why was a child never returned to mother's care? Those are really the questions. And you have to look at the totality of that evidence. If, for instance, the ICPC had really been a big issue, by the way, mother had agreed for placement of the child with the grandparents, the paternal grandparents. But if that had really been an issue, it's probably an issue that would have never helped mom. The evidence shows that mom said that her stepfather had tried to molest her and tried to molest other kids. So do you think Virginia, it's editorial, so do we think that Virginia, with that information, is going to approve an ICPC? It's just not going to happen. Again, there's facts in the record to show, so you could have gone for an ICPC, maybe, but the facts show that the odds are it wouldn't have happened, and it shouldn't have happened in that case. So you have to look at these facts, and I'm sorry if I'm still not answering your question. The idea is, if we're going to do it in the TPR, which is what happened here, I'm sure you have to use a clear and convincing.
But it's hard to say that there's no harm, because at a juncture where you stop visitation, there's lots of critical junctures. So, and that was the same thing in mom's case. After she was appointed counsel and not given counsel, there's restrictions on her visitation. There was a permanency hearing where there's a multitude of different permanency options for a child, including the option of asking for additional time. Having an attorney, I have a hard time saying that having an attorney at those critical junctures that occurred after her request would be harmless.
It's why this case is so fact sensitive. You have to look at these facts. It can't be taken out of context. Mom had not done anything up to this point. She hadn't done anything. And so the court's looking back at that. How can you show error if mom is not actively trying to do what she's supposed to do?
In a criminal case, let's say it was a criminal case and a defendant was asked for an attorney and didn't get an attorney, and then it goes up on appeal, the standard of that would be reversal. There would be reversal.
Well,
why, in a case involving children, wouldn't there be an increased standard?
Well, one, when you're talking about criminal, you're talking about the physical liberty being put at issue. I mean, I could lose my physical liberty, and so the courts have said quite consistently, if that's at issue, that's a bigger deal, and counsel should be appointed. We don't have that issue here. It's been addressed previously. This is about a liberty interest being interfered with at the CHINS level and potentially being exterminated at the TPR level. And this court recently said, citing the Sandusky U.S. Supreme Court case, that we recognize, and it's a quote from Sandusky, but we recognize that the TPR creates a much bigger picture. You're talking about potentially eradicating a parent's liberty interest. The CHINS is much less. I know counsel said because of ASFA changing and things go much more quicker, really what ASFA did was really put the focus on the child where it really should be. Everyone's supposed to be looking at where this child is, keeping the eyes upon the child. That's the barometer of these cases. And also looking at what the parents do. So I think it's a bigger difference between a criminal case and the CHINS case here. And I don't know. There are termination cases out there where a father, for instance, I can't remember off the top of my head the citation, but father wasn't given counsel, and the court said, we're not going to reverse because you weren't even there to ask for counsel. You never showed up until after the appeal or after the case. So, I mean, that's not a great difference, but, I mean, it's not so solely no counsel reversal. You still look at the facts of the case. And I would like to say, Your Honor, if we're looking at 31-34-46, you have to look at the totality of that statute, because where does it point us? It points us at 34-10-1. It points the judge who's going to appoint counsel for an indigent parent to look at 34-10-1 at sight. That's really discretionary, and the counsel would actually cite it for that statute, but our statute that she's saying is applicable cites to 34-10-1 and directs the court there to make its determination as to whether counsel should be provided in the case. It's an indigency statute. And the interesting thing there, if you look down 34-10-2, it says that after the court has appointed counsel, if the parent, let's say in this case, is delaying the proceedings, the court can revoke that appointment of counsel, which potentially would have happened here. Let's say that mom doesn't show up. If there was an attorney, mom doesn't show up. Mom hasn't kept in contact with anybody at this point. No one knows where she is. The odds of her not keeping up with her attorney were probably pretty good, too. Counsel under Marion County with a 10-day notice could have moved to withdraw. The court could have said, mom doesn't want counsel under 34-10-2-2. So it's really hard to look at this case. It's not one of these cases where counsel was not given after asked. I mean, you know, court flat out refused, basically. So it's not really ripe for this court to make that determination. But what's really interesting here is that the legislature has said parents are entitled to counsel in termination cases. Clearly, in three statutes, that is said. They don't say that here. Under 3132.4.3, Section B, it says, may appoint in all the proceedings. At the very least, this is another proceeding. The issue here is the court did appoint. That's what we're stuck with. The court did appoint. Order, it's in the order. Somehow it slipped through the cracks. We also have mothers saying, I didn't pursue that further because I was pregnant and I didn't want DCS in my life and I didn't want the court in my life. So we can't take this case as just a hypothetical without considering all the facts in the case. And I don't know where else you want me to answer. I got about a minute and 50 seconds left, but I'd be really willing to answer any of the questions you have. If no questions, I'm simply going to draw the court's attention to what I did earlier. Mother, in her own statements, said that she had not followed up with counsel because she did not want counsel. She was afraid she got involved with the court. I misstated. She said, because I was pregnant and was afraid DCS would take my child, was scared to contact anyone in the court. That's why she didn't have counsel. Her own inaction. Her own counsel in the May 2012 says we goofed up. Because it's in the court's order she was appointed counsel. And moreover, what we see here is a pattern by mother of not cooperating, not doing what she needs to do to put her child first. Look at the totality of the evidence. She had written this child off. She had abandoned the child. She moved on. Her letters to her boyfriend while he's incarcerated really does not even mention this child. It mentions the new child. It's all talking about this new child. We're going to start a new life. She had chosen at that point what she was going to do. And then even though in November, that after this child's born, she's offered more services, a third opportunity for services, she still doesn't engage until, I believe it said March 9th, is when she has her assessment in Virginia. And that's only after she got the 10-day notice for the termination hearing. We would again ask the court find no error was made in regarding the attorney issue, and also find that there was sufficient evidence here. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hanke. Ms. Corozos.
Thank you. First of all, I want to address the argument that Department of Child Services, the Attorney General was making, that makes it seem as if mother could have unknowingly waived her right to counsel by not coming to court or by not showing up. The excerpt that he read from the transcript, mother was worried about, because she was pregnant, about her child being taken. But if she'd had an attorney, the attorney could have helped with that. The attorney could have had mom appear telephonically at the permanency hearing. She had medical complications and couldn't travel. So those are things the attorney could have helped with. But a parent can't sort of accidentally waive their statutory right to counsel. She was supposed to have an attorney appointed. The court said they would. There's a statute that covers it. A parent, it's 31-32-5-5. A parent who is entitled to representation by counsel may waive that right if the parent does so knowingly and voluntarily. So we do provide in some circumstances of failure to appear being a notice. So, for example, 3132.5.7 says, the right of a parent or custodian to be present at any hearing concerning the child is waived by the person's failure to appear after lawful notice.
Ms. Karikos, did the trial court order, I think it was Magistrate Bradley, did it include the appointment of counsel? Did the court order approve it?
I'm sorry?
From the hearing when mom asked for counsel and she was found qualified, did the order include the order that mom?
No. So that was included in the court records that it did say that counsel would be appointed, but no appointment was made. So there wasn't an order that went to the...
Was there a copy? I mean, was there a copy to the public defender's office? Was there anything included in
no.
the order? So the order said mom gets counsel appointed. What is the culture in Marion County?
That's where it dropped. The court should have given that to the public defender's office, which they didn't do. So public defender was never appointed. Mom did try to contact the public defender's office several times, and that's in the transcripts, and she was told that they hadn't received an appointment, that dad was represented, but they didn't have one for her. She even did contact Department of Child Services family case manager and ask about counsel, and they said, well, just call the public defender's office. So it wasn't as if she just didn't want an attorney, but and also that's the hearing that where she appeared in May after the court said, yes, you can have an attorney, you're entitled. She got on the wrong bus, so they started. There was no conversation. The conversation was, and that's in that supplemental transcript that I had filed. The court said, does mom have counsel? DCS, I think, said, I don't think so. And then they went off the record to allow mom time to get there because she got on the wrong bus. She gets there's no discussion, no nothing. So she doesn't know what's going on, and she didn't object, but... She didn't waive her right to counsel at that hearing. Mom did agree to place the child with the paternal grandparents, but she did not. She did want to pursue the interstate compact, and she made that clear during the proceedings, the Chin's proceedings. They raised an issue about stepfather. That information came from the paternal grandmother. My client denied that, and I think one of the service providers said they hadn't heard her say that. The transcripts, so providing an attorney at the termination hearing isn't a remedy to this. And the reason is because at the final hearing, there's been months, even years, where the record was being created by DCS, by DCS's attorneys who are at every hearing, by the guardian ad litem, by the guardian ad litem's attorneys who appear at every hearing, by the court, by the service providers, and by unrepresented parent. And so to try and say, well, you had a fact-finding hearing at the termination hearing, that does not cure that. But I see I'm out of time.
Thank you very much, counsel. We appreciate your presentation. The court will discuss this with Justice David, and after we reach our conclusion, we will let you know. Thank you very much.
All right.